Jack and Doc had their primary target. It wasn't one of the larger buildings in Harmony, like the church or the school. Their earlier reconnaissance had identified the old sheriff's office, where Ludlow Thompson had once enforced the law, as a place where several of the norms in the gang were staying during the night. Neither Doc nor Jack had super-accurate digital wristchrons like Ryan and JB, but the albino had an uncanny sense of time passing, and he had been mentally counting down toward the 5 o'clock mark.
Is there long to go, dear boy?
4 minutes, I make it.
We should hear the shooting once the others open fire, should we not?
Should. Your blaster full ready?
Doc's commemorative gold-plated Lamar Jeb Stewart Special had been field-stripped, oiled and cleaned, unloaded and reloaded by JB, while they waited for the dawn to draw closer, with some scabrous comments about Doc's neglect of the beautiful weapon. The 65 caliber grapeshot round was devastating and had saved the old man's life on several occasions. But it was a one-off shot, and once fired, it was fiddling and perilously time-consuming to alter the hammer to make it engage on the nine chambers of 44 calibers. So, it was going to be the 44 spitting from the weighty cannon. They waited in a narrow alley at the rear of the building. The curtains were open, and Doc could see that there was an oil lamp still lit in the back, where Carl had told them the cells were situated.
Think that the ungodly are still awake?
Find out in 3 minutes.
In preparation, Doc stretched his knees.
No. Oh.
Jack looked worriedly at him.
Sorry, dear lad. Sorry. Presume not that I am the man I was.
2 minutes.
A shadow passed across the face of the dawn sky, swooping low over the sheriff's office, its great eyes staring down at the two men. Doc ducked under its whispering feathers.
Barn owl. I assume that it is returning to its nest after a night's hunting. I hope it has been successful. I hope that we shall be successful.
We know soon.
Time is passing. Should we not ready ourselves closer to the door?
Let's go do it.
Harmony still slept as the ill-matched couple, the old man towering over the teenager, made their way up the path to the back of the sheriff's building. Jack went first, stepping lightly onto the porch and testing the door handle. He looked back to give Doc the thumbs up. Light spilled out past the slim youth, reflecting off the satin-finished Colt Python with its 6-inch barrel. He gestured with it for Doc to go around the front, where he could cover any attempts to escape. Jack slipped in through the door, seeing that a game of cards had been in progress, though all but one of the players had fallen asleep, slumped face down among the tumbled bottles, stained cards, and half-empty glasses. The stink of liquor and sweat was heavy in the room. Only one was still awake, but drink had totally fuddled his brain, and he blinked at the apparent apparition. The man was fat, in his 50s, with thinning hair pasted across his scalp. His fingers were covered in cheap rings.
Huh? You brought the breakfast for us? Well, it's way too fucking early, so you can go away and stick it up your ass, kid. Unless you want something else up your early morning, eh?
Don't call me kid, fucker.
What the hell?
Doc transferred the Lama to his left hand as he propped the sword stick against a hitching rail. He wiped the sweat from his right hand before taking up the heavy gun again. Two men raced out of the station, one wearing only a shirt, the other in a pair of shorts, both barefooted, neither armed. Doc leveled the Lama. At a range of less than 20 feet, both 44 caliber bullets sent the fleeing thugs tumbling like shotgun rabbits. Jack appeared in the door.
Nobody else here.
19 were dead or down and dying after the first raid. Roughly 10 norms and a couple of stickies were left alive in Harmony. All of them had jerked from deep sleep by the sound of shooting, broken by the occasional scream. Ryan hesitated outside the church, looking at the ville, wondering how the others had done so far. The first deaths were just the beginning. Ryan watched as a window opened in the second floor of one of the houses that they'd marked down as harboring gang members. A half-breed with a heavy mustache appeared, looking both ways, not seeing Ryan in the shadows. He climbed out onto the top of the porch, followed by a companion. Both were partly dressed, holding bundles of clothes, and both with unidentifiable revolvers in their hands. Ryan waited until they were both preparing to jump before bringing the Steyr rifle to his shoulder. The light was growing stronger every minute, but the night scope was still useful, the laser image enhancer making everything easier. The plan had been for everyone to separate after the first raid, going to other properties where they believed other gang members were staying.
Hey!
A stocky man with a bush of gray hair and protruding teeth suddenly stood before Doc. The man had kicked the Lama from Doc's fingers, sending him staggering into a green-painted picket fence.
Who the fuck are you?
The man had a bowie knife in his right hand, and he gestured toward Doc with it.
We are the Village Green Preservation Society.
Doc gave a twist to the silver lion's head hilt of the sword stick.
Fucking sword bastard!
The man came at Doc in a grinning, clumsy rush, the blade held low in the classic knife fighter's pose, ready for the lethal cut upward at the unprotected belly. Doc extended his right arm, his wrist flexible, keeping the needle point moving in a small circle.
Cursed be he that first shall cry enough!
The man feinted to the left and came in at Doc from the right, hacking away with the long blade of the bowie knife. Only Doc wasn't there. He'd ignored the feint and moved toward it. Doc lunged with all his strength, aiming at the point where the man's throat melted into his broad chest.
A hit! A palpable hit!
A turn of the wrist shredded the man's lungs, opening up the artery in his neck. Doc resheathed the sword, then picked up the Lama and turned away.
God save the Village Green!
Mildred had spotted two desperados as they were running for the livery stable, trying to get mounts to escape the slaughter. She stood in the center of the main street of Harmony, her legs slightly apart, holding the butt of her ZKR 551, looking along the barrel of the target revolver.
Hey!
The pair of fleeing killers halted in their tracks, about 80 yards away from her. They turned, both holding single-shot cap-and-ball muskets, and grinned when they saw a stocky black woman in her 30s, with beads in her plaited hair, wearing a quilt-lined denim coat over reinforced military jeans tucked into calf-length boots of black leather. The woman held a small handgun and seemed to believe it threatened them.
You got us real scared, sweetheart! This toy blaster might reach about halfway!
Mildred had shot him through his open mouth, a full metal jacket 38 blowing the back of his head all over the street. His companion turned and gaped at the mist of blood and brains that hung in the air around his friend's skull. Mildred had shot him through the right ear, the bullet tumbling and taking out his left eye. She turned and moved into one of the side alleys, continuing the hunt. Christy and Carl stayed together. It had been his idea, pointing out that he knew the Ville better than anyone and could take her along safe shortcuts. But when they reached the neat house, they found the door wide open and a small, smoldering fire outside. Christy ran up the front stairs and into the house. The pair of stickies they'd hoped to find had already fled, leaving the married couple who ran the bed and breakfast dead on the kitchen floor, along with their three children.
Where do you reckon they've gone? You think Ryan and any of the others are still alive?
JB's next destination was the garage where they knew the small Armawag was kept, along with the two-wheeled trailer that held spare cans of gas. He swung the Uzi on its sling across his back and grabbed the door handle.
Shit!
JB spun, seeing the two of the gang had the same idea as he did. They were half walking, half running toward him, one of them unarmed, the other holding what looked like a remade Model 669 Taurus revolver. If the killer had stopped and taken careful aim, it was likely that the first shot would have hit JB. But he was in too much of a hurry. He didn't get a third chance. JB grabbed hold of the M4000. He sent 20 Remington Flechettes into the first murderer. His companion skidded to a halt, looking in amazement and horror at the devastated thing at his feet. The whole of the front of the man's body seemed to turn into a huge sponge, filled with blood that was squeezed dry in a single soul-stopping moment. JB calmly waited a few moments before turning back to investigate the Armawag in the garage. Jack went to the trim house that Carl had assured them was the bordello in Harmony, and that was believed to harbor three of the norms. It stood in a neat side street off the main drag, bordering a narrow stream. with the door open. Jack could smell the bitter scent of Jolt hanging in the air like a forgotten promise. He recognized it immediately from a dozen Frontier Pestle Gaudis. For some reason that Jack had never been able to understand, Gaudy sluts were among the most addicted users of the heroin, cocaine, and mescal mix. The occupants of the Bravo were all together in the big front parlors, four women, mostly edging into middle age, and three members of the gang of murderers. All of them were deep in a drugged sleep. They were all partly dressed, and a pot-bellied iron stove was still throwing a lot of heat into the room. There was a round mirror, a pair of syringes, and some white powder on a small table, along with three empty gin bottles. One of the gang had fallen asleep in the act of copulating from behind with a fat, bleached Gaudy slut. He was still draped across her, with his pants around his ankles. Jack holstered his gun and reached into the small of his back and drew one of his beloved throwing knives. Holding it by the taped hilt, he silently walked over to the closest murderer. As gentle as a surgeon, he opened the man's carotid artery. Jack went to the next man with his leaf-shaped blade. Jack went last to the gang member who'd been overcome by the jolt while still in the sex act. He cut his throat with the same professional expertise. The man tried to push himself off the woman, sliding down over her buttocks. The sudden movement made the woman blink awake, her head turning from side to side as she tried to puzzle out what was happening. Jack wiped the reddened steel of the knife on a cushion and, smiling to himself, walked back out into the brightening morning. By their counting, that was the end of all the norms in the gang. Nearly 30 human lives snuffed out in the center of a beautiful ville in Old Colorado. Ryan met up with Jack, Duck, and Mildred outside the main store of the ville. JB quickly joined them.
The Arma Wags gassed up and ready to roll. Carry us all back to the redoubt with a bit of a squeeze.
There was no more sign of any threat from the gang, though a few of the honest citizens of Harmony were beginning to appear in the dawnlit streets, looking like shell-shocked victims of a savage war.
Where's Christy and Carl? Anyone see them?
They were supposed to be out to the south by the park, weren't they? Haven't heard any shooting or noise from over that way.
It seemed like it was over. Neither Christy nor Carl had heard shots for a minute or more.
You gonna stay here in the ville for a while, Christy?
Carl took a seat on a bench at the edge of the park.
No. I wish I hadn't come at all, Carl. Like I said before, you can never go back. Not really. It's good to see you. I wish you well, truly.
Some folks will want to see you.
Just tell them hi from me and that I had to get back on the road.
Christy sat on a bench facing Carl, studying her old friend, seeing in the stark morning light the ravages that time and liquor had wrought in him. She was saddened that such a handsome boy had become so weary and defeated. Christy ran her fingers through her bright red hair, feeling how tense and coiled it was, responding to the danger that still lingered in the air.
Wish I could get away from Harmony and go on the road like you and Ryan and the others.
It wouldn't work. But you could get away from here. Find a new ville and a new life. Get a good woman and settle down and have kids. That's what you should do, Carl.
He looked up and grinned at her, revealing a flash of the teenager that had once made love to her.
That'll be the day.
You could...
Carl leapt to his feet, his face contorted into a mask of hatred and rage. He moved toward her, the crushing hammer lifted in his right hand. Christy staggered sideways and fell over as Carl pushed out at her with his left hand. Her head hit the armrail of the bench, and she saw stars. Groggily, she fumbled for her gun when she suddenly realized what was happening. The last two stickies from the gang of killers had escaped from their safe house and had been hiding in the shrubbery behind her, waiting for their chance to strike. The lead mutie lunged at Carl as he brought down the hammer. The hammer glanced off the sticky's arm. He continued his lunge at Carl. They grappled while his skinny partner was groping toward Christy, lying on her back in the middle of the overgrown path. There was a hideous smile of triumph on its suffering face. Carl managed to swing the heavy hammer again at his adversary. The sticky lurched clumsily away from him, his arm dangling useless. Carl was after it.
You
filthy fuck!
Carl hammered the first sticky into the pavement, but the second attacker was still loose. He drew a straight razor from under his ragged shirt and flourished it at Christy.
I got your friend! Now I'll get you!
Carl stepped toward the sticky with the hammer raised. His foot slipped in the oozing blood from the dead sticky.
No.
The steel cut deep into Carl's neck, slicing through the sinews, veins, and arteries. Carl staggered and made a last effort to strike at the gloating mutie. But the shock to his system was too great. The sledgehammer fell from his hand.
Die, bastard!
The mutie turned away from the doomed man, toward Christy. She had her Smith & Wesson half out of its holster, but she couldn't tear her eyes away from her dying friend. Carl dropped to his knees, his hands clutching at the gaping, white-lipped wound, trying hopelessly to staunch the torrent of blood. His eyes were turned to Christy. The sticky stood over Christy, his thin cotton pants showing an obvious erection at the thrill of killing, his gray tongue flicking out like a reptile's to lick withered, sore-crusted lips. The watery eyes were flooded with hatred and lust. Still reeling from her blow to the head, Christy dragged at the butt of her short-barreled gun, but she knew with a sick certainty that she was going to be too late. The razor angled toward her face. Suddenly, a neat black hole appeared in the chest of the mutie, a little to the left of center. He took two teetering steps away from Christy, still clutching the razor, his face puzzled.
Blaster didn't shoot!
He waved the razor in the air as he stumbled backwards. Christy struggled to her feet and saw Ryan standing motionless 100 yards away, the Steyr hunting rifle still held to his shoulder. The others were grouped around him. Christy closed her eyes for a moment.
Thank you, Gaia.
She turned toward her childhood friend. Death was close, its shadowy cloak poised above the bulky figure. She dropped to her knees, lifting Carl's head into her lap, ignoring the blood. The light of life in his eyes was fading.
You saved my life.
She felt tears pricking at the back of her eyes. A part of her childhood dying in her arms.
I'll never forget you, Carl.
She kissed the dying man on the forehead. Carl managed a final half smile and then closed his eyes. As Ryan and the others came to join her, Christy laid her childhood friend gently to the earth.
Over. All over, and we can go.
The companion stood outside the garage near the Armawag, ready to leave, as a group of thankful citizens walked toward the heroes.
There must be folks you know, Christy. Surely you could see them before we leave if you'd like.
No.
But they must realize that we have saved their homes and their families from probable death.
The whole Vill's running with blood. I told you, all the ones I loved are dead and gone. Or like Mother Sonia, just plain disappeared. There's nothing left here for me.
Christy climbed into the Armawag and waited for the others to join her. Ryan tried to cope with the folks who had flooded out of their houses, gaping at the dozens of corpses, unable to believe that the shadow of the murderous gang had been lifted from them. Their leader was Richard Thompson, brother of the murdered sheriff. Ryan met him down the road a little bit, away from the Armawag.
Friend, you must stay a few days.
You don't know how it'll be. Innocent people have been harmed here, and the time will come when you all resent us almost as much as the gang of murderers.
No, I assure you that we won't.
Guess we're a bit like the wind that blows through and cleans away the bad things. You don't want to be reminded of us.
Someone said they saw little Christy Roth, the daughter of Mother Sonia, along with your group. We'd like to talk
to
her.
We have to go. You have dead to bury, and tears to shed.
And with that, Ryan turned his back and quickly strode back toward the Armawag.
Let's go, JB.
The vehicle began to move out onto the main street of Harmony. They made a right turn and headed north back toward Fairplay and the highway that wound down the valley toward the interstate and Glenwood Springs. Christy was sitting in the rear of the wag, with the rear obslit partly open, looking out of it as Harmonyville shrank away behind them. They reached the pre-dark interstate close to the village of Frisco around mid-afternoon. A rusted sign told them that Glenwood Springs was 80 miles away.
Could we stop at Frisco? This is like traveling in a can of tuna with the added flavor of the exhaust fumes. Maybe stretch our legs a bit.
Yeah, I could use a break myself.
Perhaps driving beats the labor of walking, but I am most damnably cramped. I have been shaken, rattled, bumped, and bounced from pillar to post and back again. I would thank the Lord for some good fresh air.
Doc, more prudish than the others about his bodily functions, walked deep into a tangle of chokeberry bushes, vanishing totally from sight.
How about that?
You okay, Doc?
I am in the very best of health, my dear fellow. Tip-top. Top of the tip-top. Top of the world, Ma. Top of the morning to you, Seamus. Spin the top.
Everyone else waited by the armor-wag for Doc to finish up. Eventually, he came lumbering out of the bushes. Ryan saw that the old man appeared to be holding a long arrow.
What you got there?
There was the body of a deer in the brush. Well, to be perfectly specific, it was little more than a skeleton. Bones and a few fragments of its skin. And this was jammed between two of its ribs. Poor animal must have been shot and fled, eventually finding its surcease in hiding.
Ryan took the arrow, measuring it against himself.
Huh. At least 4 feet long. And the feathers aren't goose, are they? Look more like a heron or something like that. Fire blast. Of course. It's like one of those Japanese arrows, isn't it?
That was my thought. They certainly get around, our mysterious Oriental brethren, do they not? From the condition of the deer, I would hazard a guess that it met its doom at least 6 months ago.
Ryan examined the arrow, which was beautifully made, far better than most of the hunting arrows that he'd seen from the Oglala and the Chiricahua, from plains to mountains. And he wondered again where the samurai came from and how they traveled so easily through Deathlands.
No sign of any others, Doc?
Absolutely none. The deer could have run for miles before expiring.
It's time we were moving on. Need to get through Glenwood Springs before dark and up to the redoubt. Maybe rest up in the dormitories.
If they haven't flooded.
Fire blast. I forgot about the burst pipes and all the excitement since then. Yeah, as long as the redoubt's not flooded out, we could spend the night and get some rest. Then jump first thing the next morning.
JB slid behind the wheel of the small four-wheel drive wag.
No kind of shortcut, north?
No, afraid not. Have to go right into the villa and then dump the wag. Rest on foot.
By the time they saw the pale yellow lights of Glenwood Springs in the distance, the sun was already setting beyond the endless forest. Suddenly, a strange, muty creature galloped across the road in front of the armor wag, casting a long, grotesque shadow on the highway. The body looked like a large deer, though with shortened, stubby legs that ended in furry, clawed paws. The neck was short and muscular, supporting a head that looked like a cross between a wolf and a pig. A rooting snout and a double row of wickedly curved teeth glinted red in the setting sun. It turned as it reached the edge of the pavement. The creature glared from three split-pupil eyes. There was such an aura of hatred from it that Ryan flinched. Instinctively, he dropped his hand to the butt of the Sig Sauer, even though he knew that the layers of armored steel that surrounded him would protect him from any attack, even from a monstrous creature like that.
What the hell was that?
I don't know. I just hope I don't ever meet it on a moonless night.
The wag continued on into the ville of Glenwood Springs.
Perhaps we should find some place to eat in the ville.
I don't know. Remember that little girl from Ma's place? If she spotted us, we'd have a lynch mob after us.
Should have strangled her, you and Doc. Trader said a live enemy's a bad enemy.
Yes, dear youth, we do all know that. But the taking of human life still comes hard to me. You can call me a humanitarian old fart, but I would rather spare than take. I realize that traveling the way that we do through this blighted world of Deathlands must inexorably weaken the sensibilities, but it will never justify a callous disregard for the sanctity of life.
Live like you want, Doc. Just saying to go was vicious. Better chilled. Now we can't risk a stop here to eat. It's a shame.
They drove past the burned-out ruins of Ma's place, heading a little way out of the ville, up toward the north. They took a side trail that carried them another mile, up a long, rising grade, past some raggedy, tumbled shacks, shortening the walking distance from the redoubt. The road petered out along a forest of stunted pinyon pines. The slope was too steep. The arrow in the temperature gauge had slid deep into the red.
And that concludes the entertainment for the day. Oh, my dear friends, smell that wonderful scent. Conifers in the cool of evening after a hot summer's day.
Everyone piled out of the sweating interior of the armor wag, Ryan last of all.
Gonna leave the wag or blow it? Could just walk away, give someone a nice present.
Hell, why not? You're not wrong, Doc. That is some good air.
Are we gonna walk on up to the redoubt lever or camp here?
Ryan considered the question, glancing up at the red-tinted cloudless sky, with the segment of silver-bright moon riding high.
Should be enough light to hoof it, I reckon. Let's move.
Before full dark descended over Colorado, they had covered a mile and a half, climbing constantly up a winding path among trees. Twice they had disturbed small herds of long-horned goats that clattered off across the bare rocks.
How do you feel about your mother maybe being alive, Christy?
Can't say. Gaia, but I wish I knew where she was.
Could be we'll bump into her one day.
Could be.
It's odd not to have to keep looking over my shoulder to make sure the Dean's not gotten himself into trouble. I hope the kid'll be all right.
If any kid can survive, it's Dean Cotter. Takes after his father.
You think so?
I know so.
Doc struggled with the climb, still not acclimated to the altitude. Oh,
upon my soul, there was a time in my life when I used to participate in this sort of madness for pleasure. Presume not that I am the man I was. I have the odd feeling that I have already said that not long ago. Perhaps I did, and perhaps I did not. I know not.
Can't help you, Doc. Truth is, we never listen to what you say anyway.
Ryan paused to look down over the twinkling lights of the Ville, now far below them.
Let's rest here. How is everyone?
I confess that for once I shall almost be pleased to make a jump. Anything to get away from this damnably thin air.
But it's good thin air, Doc. You told us that yourself.
That was then, madam. And this is definitely now. How much farther, my dear Ryan?
We're moving across to cut the trail we came in on. Unless there's a problem, my guess is that we should find ourselves back close to the redoubt in about another hour, hour and a half. No more.
The huge boneyard outside the main entrance seemed to tower higher, its sharp angles stark in the moonlight. Jack stared up at the towering redoubt.
Hope no more crazies.
I think we killed off the last of the breed. Well, we'll soon find out.
Ryan realized that he was unconsciously waiting for Dean to jump forward and offer to press in the triple-digit number code that would open the vast vanadium steel sectors, as he always did.
You waiting for Dean to do the numbers? Me too.
Everyone smiled as they realized that they'd all had precisely the same thought.
Allow me.
Jack bent over and touched the ground by his boots.
No sign of water. Dry.
Ryan nodded. He'd already noticed that. There was no way of knowing until they were actually well inside the ranging military complex whether the flooding that had been going on when they left had continued, or how much damage it might have caused, or how deep it might have gotten. It could have reached down into the deeps of the redoubt and affected the Matrans complex and the gateway itself. There were far too many questions, with not enough answers.
Everyone get clear of the doors, in case we get a tidal wave rolling over us.
Doc pushed a finger at the worn keypad, peering to make sure he was hitting the right numerals in the correct order.